And Chris is going to put on another hat now and read to us from Job.
This is from Job chapter 38, verses 1 to 7 and 34 to 41. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind. Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Gird up your loins like a man. I will question you, and you shall declare to me. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me, if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched out the line upon it? On what was its basis sunk, or who laid its cornerstone, when the morning stars sang together and all heavenly beings shouted for joy? Can you lift up your voice to the clouds so that a flood of waters may cover you? Can you send forth lightning so they may go and say to you, here we are? Who has put wisdom in the inward parts or given understanding to the mind? Who has the wisdom to number the clouds? Or who can tilt the water skins of heaven when the dust runs into a mass and the clods cling together? Can you hunt prey for the lion, or satisfy the appetite of the young lions when they crouch in their dens or lie in wait in their covert? Who provides for the raven its prey when its young ones cry to God and wander about for lack of food?
Thanks, Chris. And now Anne is going to read to us from the Gospel of Mark.
And the reading is Mark 10, 35 to 45. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came forward to him and said to him, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." And he said to them, "What is it you want me to do for you?" And they said to him, "Grant us to sit one at your right hand and one at your left in your glory." But Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you are asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink, or be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with?" They replied, "We are able." Then Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you will drink, and with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand or at my left is not mine to grant, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared." When the ten heard this, they began to be angry with James and John. So Jesus called them and said to them, "You know that among the Gentiles, those whom they recognize as their rulers lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them. But it is not so among you, but whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many."
Amen. As a sort of brief introduction, did you know that when he first wrote that hymn, which is remarkably meaningful for a great number of us, he wrote, "I climb the rainbow through the rain," because he understood how tough it can be to actually hold on to how things are when life is tough. And I think it's interesting. I find myself thinking that word as well as trace when I sing it. One of the things we need to do if we're to grasp joy through pain and all those other difficult things is to focus on God. And we don't do a lot of that. We don't I mean, we don't sit in church and just in silence focus on God, do we? Not for very long, anyway. And if you take the Job reading, which is only a little bit of all of that, this is God's answer to a man who was having trouble and hung on to his face but felt it okay to get upset with how things were. And he says, what about this and what about that? And his friends have got all sorts of, well, they're so-called friends. They're not friends at all, of course. They're a pain in the... Yes, because they just make it harder. And would you call somebody who made it harder a friend? No. But God doesn't answer the way we would like God to answer. God says, I'm God. And actually, you don't understand. You simply don't get it. And that, where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? We want to be a people who understand, who've got it, who can grasp it all, to say this and this, don't we? We like things to be sorted. We like things to be understandable. We like things to be okay. And God isn't like that. If God is God, we are never going to understand. Not completely. Not this side of death, anyway. Because God is more. God is greater. God is God. And we lose that. We talk about it, we sing about it, but we don't, sometimes I think we don't let it really sink in. We talk about God holding creation in the palm of one hand. Think about that for a minute. Think about what that means. Think about what that's like. Think about how far, far, far beyond us God is. Wisdom unsearchable. We sing that. Do we let it sink right in? Love indestructible, which is just as big and just as important. The wisdom of God is beyond us. An understanding of God is beyond us. Now, one way of thinking that we can cope with that is to think, okay, so I don't need to bother at all. And it is sad to say that some people think they can just leave their brains outside. No, it's not like that, because part of what God says to Job is, stand up like an adult and talk with me. So we are invited, encouraged, required, challenged to use every bit of whatever amount of intelligence we have, and it doesn't matter whether it's small or great, whatever amount we have, whatever gifts we have, to stand up in the presence of the living God for conversation, to understand as far as we're able, and to recognize that after a certain point, we no longer understand, and we have to find the way to trust that God is God, and that God, being God, does actually know what God is doing. I know we wonder, well, perhaps you don't, but I do sometimes, wonder what God is doing, but that doesn't alter the fact that God is God. And that one of the paradoxes of the wonderful and amazing Christian faith is that there's this enormous, enormous, enormous gap between our understanding and God's. We are as nothing in the sight of the living God at one level, because God is so much more. And so much beyond us, and so much greater, and so much of everything. But the other half of the paradox is that same God came here to be part of us, to be one of us, to be like us, to enter into our lives, to be that close. We have to hold both those things together. And that's, I think that's sometimes quite tough, because holding on to the fact that God is that close and that near and loves us that much, that this is the God who walks through things with us, who holds us and who never leaves us, sometimes means we forget just how much more. And if we hold on to how much more God is, we sometimes forget how close God is. And it's quite hard to hold both those things together, but that's what we're invited to do. And if you put together that sort of a God with what Jesus had to say, it helps, I think, to be adults in the presence of the living God. And I do think it's amazing. When those two, it's a fascinating thing, isn't it, those two? Quite what they thought they were asking for. Jesus is quite clear they don't understand. Jesus says, you don't know what you're asking. You really don't understand what you're talking about. You really haven't got this. But presumably they wanted to, it sounds like to us, it sounds like they wanted to be important, doesn't it? They wanted to be top of the list. No wonder the others got cross. But interestingly, Jesus doesn't tick them off for that. And he does actually say, yes, you can be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with. You can drink the cup I drink. He makes it clear that he thinks they are capable of being the best disciples they can be. After all, the baptism that Jesus was baptized with, if you take it from the beginning, starts with the acknowledgement that he is the Son of God. So these disciples, and therefore us, we are promised that we can be offspring of the living God, if we choose to be. Don't you think that's amazing? And then the second part, which isn't so comfortable, the cup that he drinks is the cup of suffering. And he says, yes, you'll have that as well. And you'll be able to face it because God is with you. I know that isn't in the text, but that's what he means. You will be able to face this suffering. You will be able to do it. But, being adults in the presence of the living God does not mean strutting about all important. It has absolutely nothing to do with that. Being adults in the presence of the living God is being servants. And that means recognizing that we're not in charge. No, we're definitely not at the moment. But we aren't in charge. And that's not our fault, and that's not anybody's blame. It's a fact. We all know. You think what you all live with, what we all live with. There are people here living with chronic pain. There are people here living with chronic diseases. There are people here living with chronic grief. There are people here living with all sorts of difficulties over which we have no control, about which we can do nothing. Yes, we get help. Yes, we get support. Yes, we get treatment. But there are so many things about it we can do nothing. We're not in charge, are we? We're not in control. We can't make things different. And when we look at the world, it's even worse. People are dying of hunger, of famine, of oppression, of war, of drought and flood, and we are powerless. Oh, that's how it feels. And so if we're adults in the presence of the living God, we get into conversation with God about why isn't God changing everything, and have to accept that actually God changes things through people, and there are too many people who don't want to change things, so we're stuck. But if we are serious about being servants as well as offspring of the living God, there are things we can do. The most important, and please don't ever forget this, the most important thing we can do is pray. Our prayers sustain other people. Those of you who've been through trouble and hardship and all the things that you've dealt with know perfectly well that prayer, other people's prayers, keep you going. You know, especially on those times when your own prayer is almost impossible, and I'm sure you've been there because I certainly have, other people's prayers are so sustaining. And it may not do what you hope it would do, it may not change what you hope it would change, but God uses our praying to hold others in love. Our prayers are the first thing we can do as servants of the living God. But there are also all the other, which sometimes feel like little things, but they're not. Something as little as a smile. Somebody once said, and don't ask me who, somebody once said, smiles are contagious. 9 times out of 10, if you smile at somebody, they'll smile back. You try it with strangers. They don't have to be people you know. They'll smile back, mostly. Sometimes they don't, but, you know. A kind word, a kind deed, a small thing. Well, it might seem a small thing. People who've done shopping for other people, which is the obvious one, you know how much that's helped. You know how much difference that's made. You know how grateful people are. The small things that we can do in service of others are the things God invites us and challenges us to look for every day of our lives. We are called not to be in charge, but to recognize that we're not, even though we're invited to be adults, but to serve, to find the right ways to serve others in whatever arises and whatever happens and whatever goes on. Jesus, only in Jesus do we see clearly this compromise, this paradox, this amazing thing of the God who is God, holding all things, loving all things, working with all things, walking with all people, never, never, never turning God's back on anybody, but holding and gathering and loving and caring and being there. And the God who enters right in to the very depths of our being and says, come with me and serve your world, and together, together we can change it.